So today we start off with a story that takes place along the Appalachian Trail. It talks about Mark, a regular guy with a ranger's badge, who was out doing a routine check on the shelters along the trail. What he didn't know was that he was about to walk into a situation that he would retell for years to come. A night where he crossed paths with a mystery as perplexing as it was terrifying. He's the strong, silent type, you know? But this thing shook him up good. This is one for the books. Mark was doing his usual rounds, checking the shelters scattered along the trail. These aren't your fancy vacation cabins. They're more like rough spots where hikers crash for the night. So, this one evening, or should I say night, because it was way past when the birds stopped their calls, he's out there with just his flashlight and the moon, lighting his way. Now, he's seen all sorts of wildlife in his time, but what he starts noticing is kinda odd. The shelters, well, they look lived in, but not by hikers. There's bedding made out of leaves, real primitive-like, and scraps of food that aren't your typical trail mix. More like, well, let's just say it was stuff you wouldn't want to find in your pantry. He's scratching his head, thinking that maybe some trail recluse had gone and made the trail his home. But that didn't sit right. A recluse would hide away, not bunk in these shelters like he's on display. So this goes on for a few nights, and each shelter's got the same weird signs. And when he's out there, he is starting to feel like he's not alone, like he's got company in the woods. And not in a protective, guardian angel way, more like in a I'm figuring you out kind of way. So one night, he's at this one shelter that's way out, the kind where you think twice before stopping, because it feels like you've walked off the edge of the map. He's shining his light around, checking everything out. He's looking over the strange concoction of leaves, twigs, and food debris, and he catches these eyes. Now, ranger or not, you see eyes in the dark, your heart's gonna skip a beat or two. These eyes, they're way up high, taller than any bear would be, and they're curious, not fierce. This has him thinking every which way because it's good that it's not a bear, but bad that he has no idea what this thing is. And the eyes, they're just staring at him, all intense and focused. He's frozen, and I don't mean because it's cold out. Then he almost loses it because this thing, whatever it is, steps out a bit into the light, and it's like nothing he's ever seen before. It's huge, covered in hair, and walking on two legs, kind of stooped over like it's trying not to scare him. But let's just say it's too late for that. The creature is not making a sound, just looking at him and at the shelter, almost like it's wondering what he's doing there in its space. He described it like a Bigfoot, you know, like the kind you hear of from those old stories. But this thing's got an intelligence in its eyes, like it's understanding more than it should. Now, my buddy, he's not one to run, but he also isn't one to stick around for trouble either. He backs up real slow, never taking his eyes off the creature, and it's watching him leave. Never trying to stop him or anything, just letting him go without any trouble at all. He makes it back to his truck, and he's sitting there trying to make sense of it all. He's heard the tales that the hikers like to tell, but this was no ghost or legend. This was flesh and blood. But he's worried about who's going to believe him. A ranger claiming he saw Bigfoot. It's almost too cliche to be believable. He does his duty, reports it up the chain, but he tells it straight up. Exactly like he saw it. They listen, but don't believe it's anything as strange as he thinks it was. They figure it's a bear, or some mountain man gone rogue. But he knows better about what he saw, and he knows that it doesn't fit in any box they're offering him as an excuse. Days pass, and there's no further sign or sighting of the creature. Hikers come and go, telling random stories about things they've seen on the trails, but none like his. He keeps his eyes open, watches the shelters when he's in the area, but it's like that night was a one-off, a view into a world that is no longer showing itself to anyone. He still walks the trail, still checks the shelters, but every time he does, there's this part of him that's listening for something unusual, something out of place, like he needs closure to be able to categorize it and move on. Otherwise, in his head, it's just this intelligent, curious being that's not supposed to exist. But hey, who's to say what's really out there in the deep, dark woods of Appalachia? where the flora and fauna have existed long, long before humans were even a thought. I mean, who are we to say that we are the top species in this world? Let me tell you about something that happened a while back, in the kind of place you'd drive through and not give a second thought to unless you were looking to hike or camp there. You see, when I was a ranger stationed at the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, it's a vast place, with parts that feel like they haven't seen a human soul for centuries. And that summer, we had a strange uptick in missing hikers. Not the usual I took a wrong turn and got back late kind, but the vanished into thin air kind. The missing hiker situation was the kind of thing that starts as a trickle, a report here, a report there, until it becomes a torrent you can't ignore. At first, it was just the one hiker, a seasoned guy who knew these trails like the back of his hand. When he didn't check in, we figured he'd taken an extra day. But then a couple of young backpackers on a weekend trek didn't emerge from the woods. By the time a family of four missed their out time by 48 hours, it was clear something was seriously wrong. We spread out, checking the usual spots where folks got into trouble, near the steep ravines and tricky creek crossings. The search parties called out names, but they came back empty. Flyers with photos and descriptions went up at every trailhead and visitor center. It was all hands on deck. It got weird, too. Some of us started to jump at shadows, seeing signs of the missing in every broken branch or disturbed patch of earth. Whispers of it being a curse started to float around the break room, half joking, half desperate for any explanation that made sense. With each new disappearance, the tension went up a notch. The forest, once a place of peace and solitude, began to feel like a maze that hid answers just out of sight, teasing and ominous. That's when I stumbled upon something, a hidden cave, not on any of our maps. This cave was tucked away behind a thick brush of rhododendrons and moss-covered boulders. I remember the musty smell that hit me when I moved aside the last branch that obscured its entrance. I was actually just trying to take a look behind the brush, but ended up stumbling upon the entrance. Inside, it was cooler, and the sound from outside just stopped, like I'd stepped into another world. My flashlight beam picked up what looked like a campsite inside the cave, only it was made up of stuff from what I figured had to be at least half a dozen different missing persons. There were backpacks against the wall, a couple of tents thrown awkwardly in the confined space, and even a stack of journals scattered about. I picked one up off the damp floor and started flipping through the pages, and man, the hair on the back of my neck stood straight up. These people's latest entries talked about how they felt they were being watched, heard strange noises at night, stuff like that. Some of them even mentioned catching glimpses of something, a figure, but they always chalked it up to being overtired or spooked by bear stories. I was about to radio this in when I heard a noise from deeper in the cave, a sort of shuffling. Bravely, or maybe stupidly, I inched forward. That's when I saw it. It was huge, easily 7 feet tall, covered in hair, and it had this presence. I'm not gonna lie, my first thought was Bigfoot. I mean, what else looks like that? It just stood there not making any aggressive moves, just watching me with what I swear was a curious expression. Now, I've dealt with poachers, angry bears, even the occasional lost and hallucinating hiker out in the woods. But this? I had no protocol for a creature out of folklore. So, I just started talking to it, told it I wasn't there to hurt it, that I just wanted to help the people who were missing. I don't know if it understood or not, but it didn't stop me as I gathered up as many of the belongings I could carry. I edged backward, not wanting to turn my back on the creature. It just watched, its eyes reflecting the dim light from the mouth of the cave. I made it out into the forest and didn't stop to catch my breath until the cave was out of sight, hidden again by the rhododendron thicket. The hike back to headquarters was a blur, my mind racing faster than my feet could carry me. Every rustle in the underbrush had me jumpy, every shadow a shape I didn't want to see. By the time the squat buildings of the park headquarters came into view, dusk was in full force. I was met with a mix of relief and confusion from the team. Words spilled out of me about the cave, the belongings, the creature. I could tell they were skeptical about what happened, but the physical evidence in my pack was impossible to argue with. We sat in the break room, a circle of rangers, volunteers, and eventually law enforcement, passing around the journals and maps, each person trying to piece together the puzzle. Law enforcement quickly put a stop to us looking at the evidence and took everything away and back to their station. They said they'd be in touch. Well, they never were, and we never did find any of the missing hikers. And eventually, the creature disappeared too. At least, none of us ever saw it again. Maybe it moved on. Maybe it just got better at hiding. Who knows? As for the belongings, they helped give some families closure, though the how and why remained unanswered. It wasn't the tidy conclusion people wanted. There was no explanation for the disappearances. No triumphant return of the lost hikers. No capture of a mythical beast to parade in front of the cameras. In the end, it was just me in that cave, and a sense of unease that some things in this world don't wrap up neatly. And sometimes, the woods keep their secrets, no matter how many times you walk through them, looking for answers that don't want to be found. So there's this guy, Josh, right? He's the kind of guy who gets a thrill from the places on the map that just sort of trail off into the wild. The Grand Canyon's got plenty of those, and that's exactly where he finds himself one blistering afternoon. The kind where the sun seems to have it out for you personally. Josh picked that day to explore the Grand Canyon for a pretty simple reason. He had been waiting for a time when the trails would be less crowded, when he could have the canyon almost to himself. It was also a clear day, despite an initial call for rain. The kind of day that promised the best views and the safest conditions for someone planning to tread off the beaten path. Plus, he had this gut feeling that it was the right time. That sense of now or never that sometimes grabs hold of you and won't let go. Now, Josh isn't new to hiking. He's got boots that have seen better days and a hat that's more sweat than fabric. But today is different. He's off the beaten path, following a trail that looks like it's been walked by maybe a coyote or two, and a brave lizard, not exactly tourist central. Everything's going peachy until it's not. A loose rock, a bad step, and suddenly Josh is on a first-name basis with gravity. He's slipping, sliding, and then there's nothing but thin air and the canyon wall. His fingers find a ledge, and that's all that's keeping him from becoming a story told by future visitors. Panic's a weird thing. It's like your brain's trying to do math while your body's screaming fire. Josh is hanging there, trying to figure out if yelling for help is worth the breath when he spots it. A shadow against the sun and getting closer. It's huge, this bird, like something out of a story. For a second, Josh's mind is more about the bird than the fact that he is hanging off a cliff. It's swooping down, and Josh has this wild thought. Is it coming for me? Is this how I go? Not the fall, but some strange desert pterodactyl. It wasn't any ordinary bird that came diving out of the blue. For a second there, Josh could have sworn it was a relic from the age of dinosaurs. A pterodactyl straight out of a scene from a movie. But no, this was real life. And that massive bird looked like some kind of a California condor hybrid. Its wings were so wide, they could have been mistaken for a hang glider. Just jet black and soaring effortlessly. This wasn't the kind of bird you'd find perched on your backyard fence, looking for crumbs. It was wild, a bit intimidating, and completely out of this world to see up close. There it was, gliding in loops above him, its eyes sharp, almost like it knew that someone was in trouble. Luckily, the bird's not eyeing him like a snack. It's circling above, screeching its head off, and Josh gets it. It's not an attack, it's a distress signal. The bird's making a racket, the kind that echoes, the kind that gets noticed. Time's weird on the side of a cliff. It stretches. Every second feels like a maybe, like a chance that someone's going to hear that bird, or spot a bit of Josh's red shirt against all that rock. He tries to steady his breathing, tries not to think about the what-ifs. He can't help but feel a weird sense of calm, watching that bird circle above. He tries to focus on that instead of the drop below. The bird's got this silent strength about it that seems to ease his mind. Each loop it makes in the sky, it's like it's working for him. keeping Josh from falling through. For a moment, he's not a guy stuck on a cliff anymore. He's just a guy watching something awesome. It's funny, he thinks, how life tosses these little moments of beauty at you right when you're on the edge. Then there's a voice, a shout that's not an echo. It's followed by another and another. The bird's screeching is answered by people, by park rangers who train for when they have days like these. They're quick, professional. And before Josh really understands the how, he's got a harness around him and is feeling that he's going to be okay. The rangers tell him about the bird afterward. They say they've seen it before, that it shows itself only on rare occasion, that it's a giant among birds, and that they know to respond when they hear or see it, but that sightings are rare. Josh is left with a story that's hard to believe, about a day that started with a trail and ended with a rescue. And maybe next time, he thinks, he'll stick to the paths more traveled. But then again, maybe not, because life's got a way of throwing you off balance, and sometimes, it's not about the fall. It's about how it all plays out in the end. And he likes the ending to this story, and what it gave him in the end, his life and a story he can tell forever. So, it's another one of those nights, just cruising around the empty streets of Carson City, Nevada. The glow of the dash lights kind of comforting in its own monotonous way. I'm Mike Harmon, by the way, a cop who's seen his fair share of weird out here, but nothing like what I'm about to tell you. It's getting late, and I'm thinking about the leftover lasagna in my fridge. That's when the crackle of the dispatch radio breaks the silence. We got a call about some ruckus out at the old quarry, the dispatcher says, her voice a mix of boredom and caffeine. Teenagers, I think, probably out there trying to spook each other or something. I make the turn towards the quarry, the tires crunching on the gravel road. It's dark, real dark, but that's nothing new. I've been to the quarry plenty of times before. Kids like to think it's their secret spot, but come on, we were all teenagers once. I pull up, the headlights cutting a swathe through the black. That's when I see it, this massive, hulking figure, perched on a boulder. It's like nothing I've ever seen. Not in all my years on the force. It's covered in these iridescent scales that shimmer under the lights, a slick, almost metallic sheen to them. This thing has a tail that's thick as a fire hose, whipping behind it like it's agitated, and it moves. Not like any critter around these parts, but with a sort of deliberate, graceful menace. I'm reaching for my radio when it turns, those eyes glowing like coals, and then it's gone, slipping away into the dark, leaving nothing but a strip of that shining skin behind. It heard me, I guess, and bolted. Just like that, it slips into the shadows, like it's part of them. My heart's doing 100 miles an hour, and I'm out of the car now, flashlight in hand, chasing after where the figure disappeared. There's this part of my brain that's screaming, "Mike, you idiot, what are you doing?" But, you know, duty and curiosity make a strong cocktail. I'm searching around, the beam of my flashlight dancing over rocks and shrubs, and then I see it. A piece of skin, or scale, something. It's shimmering, kind of iridescent like oil on water. I pick it up, and it's like nothing I've ever felt, smooth and tough all at once. Definitely an organic piece of something from that creature. I bag it as evidence, thinking, this'll show 'em. They'll definitely believe me now. I get back to the station and properly store the evidence, then start recounting exactly what all I saw. Everyone's giving me that look, like I'm the kid saying his dog ate the homework. But I've got the skin, right? I put it in the evidence locker myself. Next day, I come in, and the first thing I do is check the locker. It's gone. The skin, the piece of whatever it was, it's just not there. No sign of forced entry, nothing. It's like it vanished into thin air. Or better yet, someone who wanted it gone made it disappear. Like insider information was at work here. Now I've heard about stuff like this. You know, things that don't want to be found, they just can't be. But I never really bought into it. Thought it would never happen here. And yet, here I am, staring at an empty locker, feeling like the punchline to some joke. I talk to the sheriff and he's giving me that look again. The one that says, poor Mike's lost it. I tell him, Sheriff, I swear it was right here. But it's no good. Without that skin, it's just a crazy story with no evidence to back it up. Days turn into weeks, and the story starts to have a title, which is Mike and the Mystery Creature. And that makes me sort of legend around the station. The guys rib me about it, asking if I've caught the dragon or checked under my bed for monsters. I take it in stride mostly, but sometimes, late at night, I think about that skin, the weight of it in my hand, the way it caught the light, and most importantly, the way it felt like no reptile or human skin that I've ever felt. I keep patrolling the quarry, almost hoping to see it again. I even jump every time a call comes over the radio, hoping it will be something at the quarry again. But whatever it was, it's gone. Just like the evidence, the quarry's back to being just a pile of rocks, and I'm back to being just a cop. But sometimes, on a few odd occasions, I swear I saw something shimmering out there. And I wonder if it's still out there, but being extra careful after our encounter. So that's my story. Crazy as it sounds, it's what happened to me, 100%. You believe me, don't you? All right, so picture this. There's this ranger who works at Grand Canyonlands National Park in Utah, which is this massive expanse of wild, rugged terrain. It's got canyons, obviously, and plateaus, and all sorts of places where you wouldn't be surprised to find a dinosaur bone or two. This ranger, let's call him Matt, is one of those guys who knows the park like the back of his hand. But even he hasn't seen everything there is to see in the park's remote districts. So one day, Matt is doing his usual rounds, checking on trails, making sure nobody's doing anything they shouldn't be, when he hears these sounds. They're weird, echoing off the canyon walls, kind of like a cross between a howl and a deep rumble. He's heard plenty of animal sounds before, but this is not usual, especially in the way it seems to keep repeating a pattern. Matt decides he's got to figure out what's making those sounds. He follows the echoes, trekking deeper into the park's less traveled areas. It's not long before he stumbles upon a cave entrance. Now that's not strange in and of itself, but the sounds were now quite loud and seemed to be coming from inside. Now, Matt is quite the hiker, but he's got to admit, entering caves feels like stepping into another world. Because for him, because the claustrophobia kicks in and he starts to feel like he's being smothered. However, Matt knows he's got to do this and so he starts to crawl in. The entrance is tight and he knocks his hat off trying to get in. Unfortunately, it topples down the hill, and he makes a mental note to pick it up later. Inside, the cave opens up into this larger chamber, and that's when Matt sees them. Cave paintings. But we're not talking your typical deer and hunters here. No, these paintings depict something that looks a lot like Bigfoot, the one and only legendary creature that people claim to see, but never manage to get a clear photo of. And these paintings aren't just of this creature alone. They show it alongside ancient human figures, as if they lived together or at least crossed paths hundreds of years ago. Matt is standing there, flashlight in hand, trying to wrap his head around what he's looking at. It's like he's stumbled onto a piece of history that no one knew existed. He's so caught up in the moment that he almost doesn't notice the shadow that slowly starts to pass over the cave's entrance, blocking any outside light. And then it happens. A rock, the size of a softball, comes flying out of nowhere, narrowly missing his head. Matt ducks, looks up, and there it is. Standing at the entrance of the chamber is a figure that looks exactly like the creatures from the paintings. It's huge, covered in hair, and it's definitely not happy to see him. The creature throws another rock, this time with a clear message. Get out. Matt doesn't need to be told twice. He turns to leave, but in his haste, he slips, falls, and ends up with a sprained ankle. Great, just great. Now he's not only got a real-life Bigfoot on his hands, but he's also injured and deep inside a cave. With no way to outrun or outmaneuver this creature, Matt does the only thing he can think of. He radios for help. It's embarrassing, sure, to call in a rescue, because he's been chased out by what might as well be a mythological creature. But what other choice does he have? The wait for help to arrive is tense. The creature doesn't come any closer, but it also doesn't leave. It's like it's standing guard, making sure Matt doesn't try anything. When the rescue team finally arrives, it's a mix of relief and frustration for Matt. Relief because he's getting out of there, and frustration because he knows no one's going to believe his story. They carry him out, and as they leave the cave, Matt looks back. The creature is gone, or at least it's no longer in sight. But the experience? That's going to stay with him forever. He's seen something incredible, something that challenges what he thought he knew about the world. And even though he's got no proof, no evidence to show for his encounter, he knows what he saw. The incident becomes one of those stories that's whispered around campfires in the park, a mix of legend and cautionary tale. And Matt? Well, he goes back to his duties, but he's not the same. Every time he hears an odd sound or sees a shadow move in the distance, he can't help but wonder what's really out there in the remote districts of Canyonlands National Park. All right, let me take you back a bit so you get the full picture of who I am. I grew up in a small city where you can't go to the grocery store without running into at least three people you know. It was a comfortable life, predictable and safe, if that's what you like. My city was in Minnesota, right by Lake Superior. It's cold there, but boy, is it beautiful. I wasn't the type to stay put. Even as a kid, I was always the one climbing trees, scraping knees, and coming home with pockets full of rocks and bugs. My mom used to say I had more energy than sense, and she was probably right. High school was a blur of sports, camping trips, and dreaming about what lay beyond the city limits. After high school, I didn't go the college route. It wasn't for me. Instead, I learned a trade, became an electrician. It's decent work, keeps me busy, and I like the satisfaction of fixing things, making stuff work. But it's more than that. Being an electrician means I move around a lot. Different sites, different challenges. It feeds that part of me that can't stay still for too long. Currently, I work for a contractor based out of Missoula, Montana. I moved here a few years back. Needed a change, and Montana's got this wild, untamed vibe that Minnesota just doesn't. The mountains, the forests, the rivers. They call to me. It's a good place for a guy like me. Weekdays are about wires and circuits. But weekends, that's my time. I spend every moment I can out there, hiking, fishing, camping. If it's outside, I'm all in. It's funny though, how life turns out. I moved to get away from the cold, and here I am in Montana, where winter hits you like a freight train. But I wouldn't have it any other way. That's the thing about roots. They keep you grounded, but they don't have to keep you still. And it was that love for the great outdoors that led me to that trip in Glacier National Park, where things got, well, let's just say that you're about to hear the rest. I've been to Glacier before, but this trip was at a different time of year. It was late fall, and the park was practically empty. I had my gear all packed up for a couple of days in the backcountry. The plan was to follow the trails less traveled, push deep into the woods, and just disconnect for a bit. I had my tent, some food, and bear spray, because you can never be too careful, right? On the second day, I woke up early. There's something about the cold mountain air that just gets your blood pumping. So, I left the campsite and started hiking up this steep trail. It wasn't long before I noticed something odd. There were tracks on the ground that didn't make any sense. I mean, I know my tracks, deer, moose, even bear, but these were different. They were big, too big to be a deer, and the pattern was all wrong for a bear. Curiosity got the better of me, and I decided to follow them. They led off the beaten path, through thick brush and over a couple of ridges. It was rough going, and there were a few times I thought about turning back, but those tracks, they were just so strange. Hours must have passed, and that's when I saw it. At first, I thought it was a bear, a big grizzly, rummaging through the underbrush. But then, right before my eyes, it changed. It's hard to describe, but it was like the bear just morphed, twisted into the shape of a bird, a massive raptor of some kind. And then it took off, soaring into the sky. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Was I going crazy? Too much solitude, maybe. I was about to chalk it up to a lack of sleep or maybe some bad food, but then it happened again. This time the creature landed on a branch not far from me. It was close enough that I could see its feathers ripple and shift, and then it wasn't a bird anymore. It was a person standing there, naked as the day they were born, looking right at me. I was frozen, couldn't move a muscle. We just existed together in that space. It was probably only a few seconds, but who knows for sure. Then it made a sound, a kind of chirping, clicking noise that didn't sound like any language I'd ever heard. And then, as if that wasn't enough to fry my brain, another one showed up, just stepped out from behind a tree like it was the most normal thing in the world. They started making those sounds back and forth, and it hit me. They were talking, communicating in a way I couldn't begin to understand. I don't know how long I stood there watching them, but eventually they stopped talking. They looked at me one last time, then turned away and walked into the forest. 1 minute they were there, the next they were gone, and I was left there trying to convince myself that I was still sane. I spent the rest of the trip in a sort of daze. I didn't tell anyone about what I saw, not until now. I mean, it took me a long time to even find the words to get the story out of my head. It's like all the words I knew just weren't sufficient. To this day, I can hardly believe it myself. But it happened. It really happened. So, there you go. That's my story. Make of it what you will, but I know what I saw. And I'll probably spend the rest of my life trying to understand it. But at least now, I can get it out of my head. You know, I never set out to be a park ranger. It kind of just happened. I was in a bit of a rut working odd jobs, nothing that felt right. But then my buddy Alex, who had been a ranger at Big Bend in Texas for a few years, came through town. We hadn't seen each other since high school, but he had this fire in his eyes when he talked about his job, the open sky, the wild trails, and the freedom. He told me stories of the stars over the desert, the sunrises that just insane, and the quiet that wasn't really quiet at all. That was it for me. I was sold. I wanted that to be a part of something bigger, to protect it, to live it. So I applied, and before I knew it, I was swapping concrete for dirt under my feet and a sky full of stars instead of streetlights. It's been 7 years since I put on the uniform, and there's not a day I don't think about that conversation with Alex and how it changed everything. So now I've been working as a ranger at Big Bend National Park for the better part of a decade. It's a job I love. You're out there in the wild. Every day brings a new kind of surprise. But this one day, I'm telling you, it was different. So there I was, just doing my regular rounds, checking the trails to make sure they're all clear and safe for the hikers. It was one of those perfect days, not too hot, not too cold, just the right kind of weather for a good day out in the canyons. I was lost in thought, thinking about the repairs we needed to do on one of the older bridges, when this sound just sliced right through me. Deep and guttural, it echoed off the canyon walls in a way that made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. But at the same time, the sound pulled me in. I had to find out what it was. I followed the sound, my mind racing as I made my way down to a ravine. It was a tricky spot, one of those places you don't go unless you need to. I slid down more than anything, just to get to the spot. I was as quiet as I could be, didn't want to startle whatever was making that noise. And that's when I saw it. This creature, it was hunched over by a stream, its fur almost the same color as the rocks around it. I'm telling you, if it hadn't moved, I would have walked right past it. Its camouflage was amazing. It was big, bigger than any coyote or bobcat. And it had these eyes that just seemed to pierce right through you. We locked eyes for a moment, and it grunted, a sound so deep I felt it in my bones. Before I could even think about what to do next, the creature scrambled up the cliff face. I've seen billy goats up on those cliffs, and they're quick, but this thing? It was like gravity didn't apply to it, like the rocks were just another flat surface for it to run on. It was astounding to watch. I just stood there for a second as the questions came like wildfire. What was it? Was it dangerous? Should I radio it in? But then, what words would I use? Hey, I just saw a creature that defies all explanation. You might want to send a team to check it out. Yeah, right. Don't think so. So, I did the only thing that made sense at the time. I tipped my hat, as if to acknowledge the wildness of this place, and the fact that some things in it are beyond my understanding. And then I just carried on with my rounds. I felt silly afterwards, but that's the thing with 2020. You only have perspective once the thing is over with. I kept an eye out for tracks or any sign of the creature as I went, but if it left any, they were as good at blending in as its fur was. By the time I got back to the station, I'd half convinced myself I'd imagined the whole thing. But here's the kicker. A couple of weeks later, I'm having a drink with some of the other rangers, and one of them starts talking about weird things we've seen in the park. Turns out, I'm not the only one. A couple of them have seen something they can't explain either. No one's got a good look at it, and no one's got any proof. But we've all got stories. We don't talk about it much. It's like an unspoken agreement between us. The park has its secrets, and maybe it's better that way. That day, though, it changed the way I look at the wild. There are things out there, in the depths of the canyons and the high ridges, that don't have a name. And maybe, just maybe, that's how it's supposed to be. Eddie was a man who lived for the thrill of the unknown. You've had friends like that, right? Friends always looking for more. He craved stories that sent shivers down his spine and sought out experiences that most people would be too afraid to try. It was no surprise then when he found himself driving down Bray Road on a misty fall night, chasing the infamous beast that supposedly prowled the area. The small town of Elkhorn lay silent as Eddie's car navigated the winding road. Dense woods on either side seemed to challenge him. They dared him to ask about their secrets. The mist hung low, a vision representation of the uncertainty that blanketed Eddie's mind. The hairs on his arms were standing on end. Equipped only with his curiosity, Eddie grit his teeth as the excitement nearly became more than he could bear. Bray Road was renowned for encounters with the unknown, a hotspot for ghost stories and otherworldly apparitions. Eddie didn't care for those. He cared about the beast, a creature neither wolf nor man, said to stalk the darkness with eyes glowing like burning embers. The more dangerous it was, the more tenacious Eddie could be. As he rounded a bend, his car's headlights shined through the mist and revealed a desolate stretch of road. He slowed, scanning the surroundings for any sign of the elusive creature. A sudden chill crawled down his spine, and the unsettling feeling of being watched settled in the pit of his stomach. I don't know how to describe that feeling entirely, but I imagine it's the way a mouse feels just before it sees the cat. The radio, Eddie's only real companion that night, crackled with static. He dismissed it as a glitch, but unease clung to him like an unwelcome guest. He switched it off, plunged himself into an eerie silence that somehow made the night sounds louder, the rustle of leaves, the distant hoot of an owl, and the haunting howl of a lone wolf. Brake lights flickered ahead, casting an ominous glow through the fog. Eddie squinted, heart quickening. A silhouette emerged between him and the other vehicle, standing at the roadside. A figure, hunched and menacing, eyes reflecting the pale glow of the moon. The beast of Bray Road had found him. Eddie's breath caught as the creature turned his way. He fumbled for his camera, trembling hands struggling to capture the moment. The beast's eyes locked onto Eddie's, even through the veil of the windshield, burning with an intelligence that made Eddie sweat. He hadn't expected that. He was expecting something more like a dog, all instinct and no thought. But the thing he was looking at now, the thing looking back at him, was thinking. With a guttural growl, the creature started to advance. It stalked forward like a cougar. Eddie's heart wanted to explode. He knew he needed to be somewhere else, anywhere else. He needed to be wherever the beast wasn't. Pressing the gas pedal, he urged his car to escape the clutches of the approaching nightmare. The fog seemed to grab at him, wrapping around his tires like sludge. They spun in place before he peeled backwards. As he sped away, Eddie stole a final glance in the rearview mirror. The beast of Bray Road stood, form disappearing into the mist. The encounter left Eddie shaken, but his insatiable curiosity gnawed at him. He couldn't let the mystery slip through his fingers. Days passed and the moment haunted Eddie's thoughts. He couldn't believe he'd come so close to an answer, to evidence of the beast's existence, just to panic and run away. Drawn back to Bray Road, the allure of the unknown called him like a siren. He was addicted to it, I think. Armed with the kind of determination that borders on obsession, he returned to the scene of his unnerving encounter. This night was darker, the fog denser. Maybe that was only because he knew what to expect this time. Eddie navigated the road cautiously, senses on high alert. The oppressive atmosphere made his shirt stick to his skin. Each inch forward was a step back into the beast's lair. A low growl eventually reverberated through the stillness, freezing Eddie in his tracks. The beast emerged from the fog, eyes burning with a hateful glow. Fear gripped him for a second time, rooting him to the spot, helpless before the creature's gaze. The beast then circled Eddie, movements fluid and deliberate. Eddie's breath quickened, sweat forming on his brow as the creature closed in. He was the prey yet again. This time, at least, he hoped not to run. In the moonlight, the beast's features only became clearer, a grotesque fusion of man and wolf, fur matted and stained. Its eyes warned Eddie again. It was still thinking, identifying him as friend or foe, maybe, as food or fodder, most likely. The way Eddie tells it, at that point, an understanding passed between him and the creature. It accepted him or knew him or something. Either way, Eddie didn't get ripped to shreds that night. He was spared. He came back to Elkhorn ranting and raving about his encounter. The locals, however, have a different way of describing those final moments. They say Eddie, like on the previous night, got back to town smelling like cheap beer. This time, they even noticed a wet patch between his legs. They say Eddie was shaking and bawling, sobbing about how he barely escaped. There's no bravery in their version. There's no profound understanding. If Eddie was truly that scared, though, would he have gone back that second time? Or is the idea that the alcohol might have stirred on his vision of a wolf man with glowing eyes? They don't know Eddie like I do, I guess. They don't know that the beast wasn't his first encounter with the weird and deadly. They don't know that he continued looking after that either. If he ever found anything more than fleeting moments with monsters, he never said. But I hope that Eddie's doing well. Jen's night started innocently enough. Windows down, radio up. It was her favorite way to end a long work week. She was done for the day, and the air in Loveland, Ohio was heavy with the onset of a summer storm. The scent of damp earth was thick as she navigated the otherwise quiet roads. She heard whispers of strange happenings around the river, tales of weird creatures that made locals nervous. Like any rational person, she dismissed it as mere folklore. Besides, real or not, she still had her weekend ahead of her. However, that evening, Jen couldn't shake the feeling that she was being watched as she drove. She turned the music down and slowed the car to a crawl. She was close to the river anyway, and that was her final destination before going home. Jen had agreed to meet some friends there for a few drinks and a few hours by the fire. She quickened her pace, her footsteps echoing in the silence. The music she'd been blasting was replaced by the distant hum of cicadas. She told herself that despite her imagination's best attempts, there was nothing out there besides the ordinary. Turning a corner, she glimpsed a figure in the dim light, partially obscured by the overhanging branches of gnarled trees. She opened her mouth to greet what was surely one of her friends. The words stuck in her throat. Her heart raced as she tried to dismiss it as a trick of the shadows, but an undeniable chill ran down her spine. It was then that she heard it, a low, guttural croak that seemed to echo from the woods themselves. Jen's steps faltered and she strained her ears to catch any movement, the wet sigh of mud under boot heels, the brush of leaves being kicked from the path. The air became charged with a strange energy, and dread seeped into her skin. It made her sweat, it made her blink and rub her brow, and it made the figure disappear. A trick of the light after all, she thought. So Jen continued walking, telling herself it was all a product of her overactive imagination. As she neared the riverbank, The moonlight danced on the water's surface, turning the usual ripples into patterns that Jen just couldn't decipher. She was still on edge. The air by the river was thick with the scent of stagnant water and decaying brush. More importantly, she couldn't smell or see a fire. And even though her friends were nowhere to be found, Jen's surroundings felt alive. Something was watching her. A rustle in the underbrush startled her, and she spun around. Eyes searched the shadows for a culprit. The Loveland Frogman, a creature from local legend, was said to be a humanoid amphibian with webbed hands and feet, lurking in the darkness. Jen scoffed at the idea, but couldn't shake the feeling that something unnatural was hiding nearby. A soft splash pulled her gaze back to the river. The woods were whipping her around without discretion that night. There, at the water's edge, a figure emerged from the depths. Jen's breath caught in her throat as the moonlight revealed a grotesque creature. Its scaled skin was thick with mucus, massive eyes that blinked in a strange pattern, as if it had more than one set of eyelids. Its wide mouth was partially open, toothless by the look of it. The Loveland Frogman stood upright. Its gaze somehow shone brighter than the moon overhead. It croaked again, a sound that reverberated through the night. Jen's blood turned to ice. Fear rooted her to the spot as the creature fixed its gaze upon her. For a moment, time seemed to stand still. Jen's rational mind battled with the surreal scene unfolding before her. She tried to convince herself that it was a prank, a person in an elaborate costume seeking to perpetuate the local legend. Yet, the creature's movements were too fluid, too otherworldly to be a mere human in disguise. As if drawn by an invisible force, Jen took a hesitant step backward. The Loveland Frogman, however, mirrored her movements, closing the distance with an unsettling grace. Its webbed hands reached out, fingers flexing in a grotesque mimicry of a human gesture. Then its mouth started to open. Its slimy maw expanded, as if preparing to swallow her whole. A surge of panic gripped Jen, and she turned to flee, her footsteps echoing in a frantic rhythm. The creature pursued, its croaks now a haunting symphony that seemed to reverberate through the very air. The woods around her became a maze of shadows, each twist and turn intensifying the feeling of being trapped in a nightmare. Jen's breath came in ragged gasps as she stumbled over roots and rocks. The creature, unyielding in its pursuit, closed in with an unnatural speed. Desperation fueled her movements as she sprinted toward the dim glow of distant streetlights, praying for the safety they promised. As she burst into the light, the Loveland Frogman halted at the edge of the darkness, its glowing eyes fixed on her retreating form. Her car wasn't far away. Jen didn't stop until she reached the safety of a gas station, where the harsh fluorescence chased away the lingering shadows. Safe within the buzzing glow of the convenience store, Jen recounted her harrowing encounter to a skeptical clerk. She laughed nervously, chalking it up once more to her overactive imagination and the eerie atmosphere of the night. "I worked behind that counter for many more years." Jen wasn't the only one to burst in with a story like that. As many times as she tried to explain it that night, we all noticed the change. She stopped visiting the river. She stopped driving down that winding road. No more windows down, no more music. She had escaped the creature, whatever it was, but the encounter never really let her go. I believe in what she saw. I believe in it, even if she told herself it couldn't have been real. Jim had been a trucker for as long as he could remember, the kind of guy who found the most peace behind the wheel, with the hum of the engine and the endless stretch of road ahead. Kansas was a familiar territory. He could navigate Route 70 with his eyes closed. Not that he would, of course, but on that particular run, the horizon played tricks on him, and what he saw was terrifying. It started subtle, like a heat wave shaking above the asphalt, a common enough sight on a scorching summer day. But it was late fall, and the air had the cold bite of winter ahead. He chalked it up to exhaustion. Too many hours behind the wheel and too little sleep will do that to you, he thought. The first few times he saw it, that odd ripple in the distance, he shrugged it off. Highways are lonely places, and the mind tends to wander. But the ripple took shape over time, morphing into something almost human, but not quite right. It was always there, just at the edge of his vision, keeping up pace with the heavy load he carried. He shared what was going on with other truckers, asking if they had ever seen anything like it. His buddies on the CB radio offered their own theories. "You're seeing things, Jim," they'd say, or, "Maybe it's one of those government drones spying on us." He tried to laugh it off, but a seed of unease had planted itself deep in his gut. The figure never came close enough to discern features or clothing, always a silhouette against the sprawling fields of wheat and the occasional cluster of trees. No matter how he adjusted his speed, it was there, a constant in the corner of his eye. By the time he reached the rest stop just outside Salina, the sun was dipping low, a bright sunset on the horizon. He pulled over, more out of a need to assure himself than any kind of actual fatigue. The truck's door creaked in protest as he stepped out, stretching legs that felt as stiff as the wrench he used on the lug nuts. He glanced around, half expecting to see nothing, hoping it was just something he needed to shake out of his tired mind. But there it was, at the edge of the tree line that bordered the rest stop, the figure. It stood motionless, and for the first time he could see it clearly. It was no ghost, nor a product of his imagination. It was a creature, tall and covered in fur, that seemed to blend with the shadows of the trees. Its eyes, a reflective red, caught the last of the daylight, and it stared at him with an intelligence that sent a shiver down his spine. Jim suddenly felt that he couldn't breathe. This wasn't possible. Things like this didn't exist outside of stories meant to scare kids, or the crazy stories told by truckers over a late-night diner coffee. But here it was, and here he was, staring back at it. He took a slow step forward, curiosity making him want to be sure it was really there. The creature did the same, stepping out of the trees into the light, where Jim could see it better. It was as if it wanted to be seen. It wasn't aggressive, though. There was actually a calmness to it, despite the intimidating size and appearance. Jim found himself rooted to the spot, not out of fear, but out of a sense of wanting to know more. Then, as quickly as it had appeared, the creature turned its head toward the sky and took in a deep breath. It then turned towards the trees and glanced over its shoulder before disappearing back into the trees, leaving Jim alone with just the regular sights and sounds of the rest stop. He didn't speak of it on the CB radio, nor to the waitress who poured his coffee at the next stop. What was there to say? That he'd seen a creature out of legend, that he was doubting his own weary brain. He didn't understand it himself, and so the words didn't come. But as he continued his route, the road ahead seemed a little less boring, with something new to think about. Thinking about how the world was bigger than the cab of his truck, and the long, straight roads he traveled, maybe there was even something magic out there. Or if not magic, something new and wondrous. And maybe, just maybe, he'd see it again.